My journey has been mixed. Entering surgery, I was certain life was dark and I couldn't keep my eyes open. But waking from surgery, I was certain that all that had changed while I was under. Now everything was buoyant and I could barely close my eyes to rest. The same thing has happened when losing love. I felt closed and dark and unable to open. Yet falling in love has always made life one singing interval of light during which I can barely sleep. Perhaps the wisdom in blinking is that it keeps us in the middle, keeps us from drowning in the dark and from burning up in the light. Perhaps this is the reflex that lets us make sense of being human. For your meditation, meditate with your eyes closed and keep them closed until you feel the need to open them. Now meditate with your eyes open and keep them open until you feel the need to close them. Repeat this and accept your very human need to wake and rest. July 20th. Learning how to float. When we stop struggling, we float. When first learning how to swim, I didn't trust the deep. No matter how many reassuring voices I heard from shore, I strained and flapped to keep my chin above the surface. It exhausted me, and only when exhausted did I relax enough to immerse myself to the point that I could feel the cradle of the deep keep me afloat. I've come to understand that this is the struggle we all replay between doubt and faith. When thrust into any situation over our head, our reflex is to fight with all our might the terrible feeling that we are sinking. Yet the more we resist, the more we feel our own weight and wear ourselves out. At times like this, I remember learning to float. Mysteriously, it required letting almost all of me rest below the surface before the deep would hold me up. It seems to me, almost 50 years later, that the practice of finding our faith is very much like this. We need to rest enough of ourselves below the surface of things until we find ourselves upheld. This is very hard to do, but the essence of trust is believing you will be held up if you let go. And though we can practice relaxing our fear and meeting the deep, there's no real way to prepare for letting go other than to just let go. Once immersed, once below the surface, it's not by chance that things slow down, go clear, feel weightless. Perhaps faith is nothing more than taking the risk to rest below the surface. That we can't stay there only affirms that we must choose the deep again and again in order to live fully. That we must move through the sense of sinking before being upheld is what trusting the universe is all about. For your meditation, fill your bathtub with warm water. Hold your hand open, palm up, with the back of your hand on the surface of the water. Feel the effort required to keep your hand on the surface. Breathe slowly and relax, letting your hand enter the water. As your hand relaxes, feel yourself meeting the deep. While breathing slowly, keep placing your hand in the water and practice entering the deep and resting below the surface. Practice moving beyond the sense of sinking. Practice the soft attention needed to realize when you are beginning to be upheld. July 21st. Revealing who we are. No bird can fly without opening its wings, and no one can love without exposing their heart. It's perhaps the oldest of inner laws, as inescapable as gravity. There's no chance of lifting into any space larger than yourself without revealing the part you hold closest to your chest. Anytime you hesitate revealing who you are, Picture yourself as a bird perched on a roof, wings tucked at your sides. To enter a relationship without opening your heart is to jump off that roof without spreading your wings. It's true that baby birds hesitate the first time out of the nest, but once tasting the air, it's in their nature to open and rise and close and land. This is their life. It's ours, too. The paradox, of course, is that we must trust that the power to lift and land for us is in revealing what we hide. Once revealed, these tender things become our wings. For your meditation, sit quietly outside, if possible, and watch the birds open, lift, and land. Breathe freely, and as the birds take flight, practice opening and resting your heart. July 22nd. Ubuntu. Ubuntu, I am because you are. You are because I am. A deep African way of being. In the winter, I met a man in South Africa. After several days together, I asked him about Ubuntu. He said, "It's a deep African custom." He didn't explain, but rather repeated its meaning more slowly and with deeper reverence. It means, "I am because you are. You are because I am." Ubuntu. It's something I've always believed in, that in the ignited space of our deepest suffering, in the release of our deepest fears, in the familiar peace of our deepest joys, we are each other. I felt it in the cancer rooms, in the eyes of burdened mothers sitting across from me, none of us wanting the dark things growing inside. Ubuntu. I have been finding it in every path, in every way. In Martin Buber's sense of I-thou, where only in keeping what is between us real can God appear. In the gift of Jesus, where two or more of you come together, there I am. In the one compassion of Buddha. In the numinous love that ancient stones emanate if we are still enough to bow to them. Ubuntu. I am because you are, even in how we live off the breath of plants. You are because I am, even in how plants live off our exhalations. I remember years after Robert helped me survive cancer, after I helped him survive alcohol. I remember the two of us in a small park eating sandwiches with numb fingers, like little damaged birds. And Robert raised his head suddenly and said, "I have had cancer," and I took his hand and offered in return, "And I have been an alcoholic." Ubuntu, how we need each other to be complete. For your meditation, sit quietly in a public place until your breath and the air you are breathing feel like one. Breathe steadily until your heart and the hearts of those around you feel like one. Keep breathing slowly until you feel with each breath the interconnectedness of all life. July 23rd. Coming to Terms. We are the stage and all the players. One of the great contributions of psychology has been to help us understand how we replay our hurts and affections with people other than those who have hurt or touched us. There are many names for this, the most well-known being projection and transference. In essence, we play what has been said or done, or what hasn't been said or done, over and over until we come to terms with it. The coming to terms is called healing, surrender, letting go, or even forgiveness. Being yelled at and then later kicking the dog is the stereotype of this. Yet more often, we replay the styles of clumsy love we experienced. For example, while growing up, I endured the cold dismissal of my truest feelings. When I'd show my hurt, I was seen as trying to weaken my parents' resolve. They then turned their backs on me as if, by showing my pain, I was trying to trick them. Having experienced this, I'm especially sensitive to the pains of those close to me, yet there are times when I catch myself holding firm, just out of reach, replaying my parents' role as well as my own. This is very humbling and upsetting, to say the least. But just as germs must run their course, all the players in our dramas must be voiced before they will leave us. Just as we keep trying to get what we never got from someone else who doesn't know our game, we also keep the trespass alive by reenacting it on others nearby until we can humbly know what it is to be hurtful, the first step toward forgiveness. I have seen myself doing what was done to me, never as cruel or as harsh, but it's been enough to make me tremble at how easy it is to be cruel when afraid, and how difficult it is to accept that we are all capable of terrible things, and how cleansing it is to realize that true kindness breathes just beneath this acceptance. For your meditation, meditate on an insensitivity you have suffered, either in childhood or in friendship or in relationship. Breathe slowly and let the person who carried this insensitivity drop away, and focus on the nature of the insensitivity itself. It might have been a turning away, a rejection, an indifference, a harsh criticism or a rush of anger, or a stealing of feeling toward you. Breathe deeply and recall the last time you carried a semblance of this same insensitivity to another. Try to recall what led you to do this. Breathe fully now, and let all semblances of insensitivity go. July 24th. Out from under. All this darkness, I'm just going to walk into the light. Job. Sometimes there's just too much to consider, too much to understand and analyze, too many consequences to play out in our mind, too many things to clean, unpack, or repair before we can go out and play. Sometimes the simplest and best use of our will is to drop it all and just walk out from under everything that is covering us, even if only for an hour or so. Just walk out from under the webs we've spun, the tasks we've assumed, the problems we have to solve. They'll be there when we get back, and maybe some of them will fall apart without our worry to hold them up. For your meditation, sit quietly and try to stop working your problems. With each breath, put a concern down and feel your being intact without it. Breathe freely and realize that your being is whole whether you solve your problems or not. July 25th. Cracks of Light. The human soul is to God as the flower to the sun. It opens at its approach and shuts when it withdraws. Benjamin Whichcote. God, like the sun, emanates on all, on the hill exposed in the open, on the plant growing in the window, even on the weed getting cracks of light under the porch. The same source of spirit emanates on our different lives, regardless of our circumstance. So our experience and perception of God in the world may be limited and different, may even change, but that doesn't define or limit the source. And though the sun appears to disappear every day, it's the earth that turns away, causing night. Likewise, when it appears that God is nowhere to be found, it is we, in the turmoil of our lives, who turn away or are turned away and back again and again. But unlike weeds that grow under the porch, we can move back into the light. This is a daytime meditation. Sit quietly in your room and watch the light outside move through the trees. After a time, keep breathing deeply and slowly rise and go outside into the light. Walk directly into a patch of light. Inhale cleanly and feel its warmth all over. Stay there. July 26th, House of Clay. The only reason we don't open our hearts and minds to other people is that they trigger confusion in us that we don't feel brave enough or sane enough to deal with. Ani Pema Chodron. There was a clay house near Putha Ditjaba in Kwakwa, South Africa. The roof was flat, made of loose sheets of corrugated iron, held in place by a taut length of wire that ran across the entire roof. Each end of the snug wire was tied to a huge bag of sand, and both hung heavily on opposite sides of the house. It appeared as if the bags of sand were a saddle of heaviness that kept the roof from flying away. At first I thought, no nails or screws, how precarious. But for some reason the scene stayed with me, till I realized that the people who lived there could open their home to the sky when things turned glorious. Now this simple clay house seemed an image of adaptability and balance, a way to make it through the storms and a way to open to the heavens. Now the heavy bags of sand were an honest and removable grounding. It makes me wonder how much do I nail down prematurely? How much of my pain comes from ripping up what I've overfastened on days I need to see the sky? For your meditation, sit quietly in your home and imagine the room you're in without its roof, with the raw light pouring in. Breathe slowly and bring to mind the roof you carry above your heart as you move through the world. Imagine what the clear days would feel like without this emotional roof. As you inhale, try to feel the pull where your protective roof is fastened. July 27th, Allowing Pain In. I am becoming water. I let everything rinse its grief in me and reflect as much light as I can. Another paradox I continually struggle with is how to let others in without becoming them. How to open the door of compassion without the things and people we feel for overpowering us. It goes as far back as Jesus and Buddha, and the miracle of such spirits is that they show us that there's some basic clear element in each of us, like water, which can glow without a name, which can allow pain and grief of others in without turning us into just pain and grief. Many traditions speak to this. We call it love when we do this for another, and compassion when we hold this intention for all living things. The Tibetan Buddhist tradition has a meditation practice called Tong Len that asks us to breathe in the suffering of the world, to hold it in that unbreakable place of compassion, and to then breathe back light. The beauty of such a practice is that it assumes and affirms that there's something timeless and indestructible within each of us that can heal us and the world if we can just open ourselves to it. For your meditation, sit quietly until you feel centered. Breathe steadily and bring to mind and heart the pain of someone dear to you. Breathe deeply, inhaling their pain to that center of compassion we all carry. When you feel their pain, you have transformed some part of it. Now, exhale light. July 28th. Grace Comes to the Wave. Enlightenment for a wave is the moment the wave realizes that it is water. At that moment, all fear of death disappears. Thich Nhat Hanh. Much like the life of ordinary waves, we as human beings are gathered in our passion out of a larger home, that sea of infinite spirit, and propelled from an unfathomable depth, we mount and curl and crest and spray, only to subside back into that from which we come. Profoundly, grace comes to the wave when it realizes what it's made of. Since it has risen from the very same water into which it will crash, its fear of ending is somewhat lessened. For it's already part of where it's going. Can it be that you and I, like simple waves, experience such an enlightenment the instant we realize that we are all made of the same water? Can truly knowing this, the way that waves know wind, lessen our fear of death? I think I experienced something like this while healing from my rib surgery. I was broken of all difference, dashed of all the ways I could distinguish myself from others. In this tired and dizzied state, I could see that we are all made of the same stuff, and that life before me and after me is probably no different than the lights and shadows flickering off my cells right now. Like the wave, aware that it's water, I realized briefly that my skin is a very thin boundary, and that wherever I'm going is the same as where I am. As a human being now aware of this larger sea of spirit, my fear of death has lessened, though even as I say this, I don't want to die. I think now that another way to think of this is to say that enlightenment is the moment we realize that we are all made of love. At that moment, all fear of living disappears. For grace comes to the heart when it realizes what it's made of and what it has risen from. In that moment, grace comforts us that no matter the joy or pain along the way, we are already a part of where we're going. Enlightenment for a heart on earth is the moment we accept that it's the loving that makes waves of us all. Again and again and again. For your meditation, breathe slowly and meditate on the nearest window. Note how the same air gathers outside the window and inside the window. Breathe slowly and meditate on how your mouth is like that window. Note how the same air gathers outside of you as well as inside of you. Breathe deeply and feel the essence of everything move in and out of the window that is you. July 29th. Live humble as a dog. Live humble as a dog and the world will come alive in your mouth. The day I brought my golden retriever home as a pup, I had no idea she would become my teacher. She was 7 weeks old and slept in my shirt the whole way home. I could feel her small rhythmic exhalation like a tiny animal wind warming my heart. Day by day, I came to understand her sheer, complete, and constant presence. I never knew anything to be so thoroughly involved in the moment at hand, so innocently devoted to whatever was before her. If she was rolling in grass, the world was the grass and the feel of the roll. If she was circling the rug to lie down, life was solely the want to curl and sigh. I came to envy my puppy's ability to be completely wherever she was. I also came to understand how she knew the world through touch, primarily through her mouth. Without the hesitation that plagues humans, she stuck her snout in everything. And this immediate knowledge of things gave her joy. This little dog, incapable of words, taught me that there's an inexpressible feeling of foundation that comes from staying directly connected to the earth, a humility that comes from directly touching whatever we're experiencing, This direct connection helps bring things alive. It's refreshing. In this way, the energy of the world floods through whatever moment we dare to enter fully. This is a walking meditation. Center yourself and walk in rhythm with your breathing. As details come alive for you, the light on a branch, the slickness of a puddle, even the moss growing from a stone, try to touch the simple things that call to you. Breathe deeply and nose your heart into the day. July 30th. When the path is blocked. When the path is blocked, back up and see more of the way. We are each a mountain for the other to climb, and often our path to love is interrupted by a mishap or a problem, or something unexpected that needs attending. We tend to call these unexpected things obstacles. Often the thing in the way comes from another person. A stubbornness falls like a tree blocking where we want to go, or a sadness comes like a flash flood to muddy the road between us. Or just as we go to rest in the clearing we have prepared, we're bitten by something hiding in the undergrowth. So in daily ways we have this constant choice, to see each other as the stubborn, muddy, biting thing that blocks our way, or to back up and take in the whole person, as we would a mountain in its entirety, dizzy when looking up into its majesty. When we're blocked in our closeness with another, we have this constant opportunity to raise our eyes and behold each other completely, then to kneel and lift the fallen tree, or cross the flooded path, or pluck and toss the biting thing. We have the chance to keep climbing so we might cup the water that runs from each other, so we might quench our thirst as from a mountain stream, knowing that love like water comes softly through the hardest places. For your meditation, center yourself and bring to mind a loved one, a friend or a partner or a family member, and focus on the one stubborn thing coming from them right now. Without denying this difficulty, inhale and widen your heart's view. Back up, if you can, and see the whole person, stubbornness and all. Breathe deeply and feel both the difficulty that is theirs as well as the entirety of their spirit which causes you to love them. July 31st. The eye is the lamp. The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eye is clear, your whole body will be full of light. Jesus. Jesus implies that the eye that is clear lets light in. Considering the eye as something that lets light in and not just something that observes light outside itself opens the heart of the matter. To make it through the days, we must consider our heart as something that lets the reality of others in, and not just something that maps its way through the desires and fears of others. To let others in as well as to let ourselves out seems essential to staying authentic. There's a liberating paradox that often cripples our hearts when seen as either or. It involves the tension between risk and safety. Often risking openness is seen as a dangerous way to lose all safety, and keeping closed is seen as a way to stay safe. This reflects a walled-in, walled-out sense of being in the world. Within the wall is safe, outside the wall is not. But this belief, of course, never acknowledges the suffocating dangers of the wall itself. The mask worn after the face has grown becomes a wall that rubs and cuts. The paradox is that in true interior ways, the only path to deep safety, that sea of inner peace, is through the shifting sands of risk, Risk opens safety. It doesn't shut it down. Only through the risk to open can we inhabit and receive the strength and fullness of what is whole. This raises the very profound question of how to define self-protection. Is it hiding who you are, or is it being who you are? Is it guarding yourself from all that you see, or is it clearing yourself to let light in? Is it preparing yourself against all that can hurt you, or is it opening yourself to all that can heal you? For your meditation, close your eyes and erase the blackboard of your mind with the sponge of your breath. Now look out and note the first instance of light and what it illumines. Hold that object before you and realize that the light it has absorbed is now moving through your screen of risk and safety. Feel it enter. Accept the light. August 1st. The pain of becoming. For the flower, it is fully open at each step of its blossoming. We do ourselves a great disservice by judging where we are in comparison to some final destination. This is one of the pains of aspiring to become something. The stage of development we're in is always seen against the imagined landscape of what we're striving for. So where we are, though closer all the time, is never quite enough. The simple rose at each moment of its slow blossoming is as open as it can be. The same is true of our lives. In each stage of our unfolding, we are as stretched as possible. For the human heart is quite slow to blossom and is only seen as lacking when compared to the imagined lover or father or mother we'd like to become. It helps to see ourselves as flowers. If a flower were to push itself to open faster, which it can't, it would tear. Yet as humans, we can and often do push ourselves. Often we tear in places no one can see. When we push ourselves to unfold faster or more deeply than is natural, we thwart ourselves. For nature takes time, and most of our problems of will stem from impatience. Before my experience with cancer, I was sorely driven as an artist. I pushed myself greatly. I think the creative impulse was deep and irrepressible in me, and ultimately healthy, but it was my secret need to achieve some sort of greatness that made me press till something began to rip. It was the unending, relentless push to measure up, and quickly, against some imagined form of myself that made the flower of my mind tear. I don't believe that people bring cancer on themselves, but I do believe that wherever we weaken ourselves, that part will give way to illness first. It was not by accident that the cancer struck the creative side of my brain. Perhaps one of the hardest remedies to accept for our pain of becoming is that wherever we are in our path, no matter how flawed or incomplete, is a blossoming unto itself. However much we've done at the end of the day is more than enough. It is dream becoming truth. For your meditation, close your eyes and meditate on a simple yellow rose that is budding. Breathe fully and do not wait for the rose to fully open to see its beauty. Rather, focus on the yellow petals about to open. See their beauty now. Breathe deeply and look upon yourself as such a rose. Don't wait for some imagined end to see your own beauty. Rather, inhale now and appreciate the beauty of yourself about to open. August 2nd. The Mermaid. A mermaid found a swimming lad, picked him for her own, pressed her body to his body, laughed and plunging down, forgot in cruel happiness that even lovers drown. William Butler Yeats. We want so badly to share our innermost experience with our loved ones, but often, like the mermaid, we forget that not everyone can go where we go. Indeed, we all share this mysterious fact that no one else can go into our depth completely. We must travel there alone. It's where we commune with God. The lad can visit the mermaid's depth but can't live there, or he'll drown. And the mermaid can visit the lad's life on land but can't stay there, or she will suffocate. We must, each of us, return to our inmost element in order to survive. Frequently we judge each other for not coming along, even take such an inability as rejection, when in fact, if we're kept out of our native element too long, we will suffocate or drown. The living terrain of relationship actually exists in the overlap of our inmost natures. The mermaid and lad return to embrace where the deep and air meet. It's the mermaid's responsibility of love to bring her treasures to the surface where they can be shared, and the lad's obligation to rinse his treasures in their common surf. In this way, every authentic relationship becomes a home where we return from our solitary communions with God. Never was this clearer to me than when wheeling Anne, my partner of 20 years, to the operating room where she would have surgery for her cancer. I went as far as I could and watched her grow smaller through the glass doors. I realized then that whether it be our quarrel with God or with dead parents or with the limitations of our humanity, each of us must go beyond the glass doors of our experience alone. And the work of compassion is to guide our dear ones as far as we can and to be there when they return. But no one can go beyond the glass doors for us or with us. On land or at sea, entangled in community or independent in isolation, we all share this essential aloneness. And in the journey between the depths and heights that nourish our souls and the touch of others that keeps us sane, we are humbled into the miracle of love. For your meditation, enter a dialogue with a trusted loved one and identify one thing you wish you could share more completely. Discuss if this is possible, discerning where you can, what efforts can be made to share more completely, and what aspects of you are simply out of reach by the nature of who you are. Now, in meditation, dive into that place where no one else can go, and bring back to the surface one small treasure, and try to share it. Switch positions and repeat this process. August 3rd, the stripping of our will. These bodies are perishable, but the dweller in these bodies is eternal. From the Bhagavad Gita. Most vegetables and fruits grow within a covering that must be peeled away if the sweetness and ripeness is to be eaten. There are many ways this speaks to the human journey, but perhaps one of the most important involves the way in which who we are grows within the covering of our will. We often protect our little seeds of effort, desire, passion, and curiosity by wrapping them in grand designs and ambitious plans that in the end rarely have anything to do with the sweetness and ripeness of what finally grows within us. However, it's important to remember that just as corn cannot mature unless it's covered for months by its husk, we need to incubate who we are within layers of who we might yet become. There's nothing wrong with this. Most things in life need a protective container in order to grow. We can hurt ourselves, though, when we keep the fruit that's us covered too long. We can go bad, can begin to spoil within, if we stay encased in old plans once who we are inside has matured. Perhaps when we move or change careers or relationships, we're trying to free ourselves of all that has covered us, even if it's helped us grow. Though we may come to realize that it may be our way of loving that needs to be shed, and not who or what we care for. The most humbling part of this is that, though we need to make plans and work toward goals, and even imagine possible futures, none of it can prepare us for the moment that we ripen. Once the soul fills out like mature fruit, all of our fantasies, ambitions, and even our deep complaints turn to useless skin. Once ripe, once able to feel compassion and joy, all forms of sacrifice and postponement for the future begin to make us decay inside. Like the silk that keeps the corn shiny, all our delicate dreams of tomorrow have served their purpose when the heart pops up like a kernel. Since none of us can control or time the ripening of our sweetness, we can only try not to define ourselves by all that covers us, even if it's helped us grow. In this way, we can strive hard and long, wanting to be the sun itself, only to ripen and burst with our little bit of sun exactly where we are. So dream as you will. Plan to build your own version of the pyramid. Scheme to make and spend several fortunes, for nothing matters but the sweetness incubated in our dreams and sufferings, finally brought to air. For your meditation, choose a piece of fruit, perhaps an apple or an orange. Breathe slowly and feel the skin that keeps you from the fruit. Thank the skin for bringing the fruit to you. Now, peel some of the skin and eat some of the fruit. Do this again while meditating on some covering, a plan or dream or desire that's helped you be who you are. Now close your eyes and peel some of your own covering, giving thanks for being brought to air yourself. August 4th. Agitations of the Dark. When the dark is at rest, the light begins to move. From The Secret of the Golden Flower. Just how do we deal with agitations of the dark? How do we make our way through the tangle of being confused or sad, or blocked in understanding a way to tomorrow? It seems natural enough to treat our problems like an overgrown path and go hacking our way through, doing small violence to ourselves. Yet this insight from an ancient Chinese text implies something harder and simpler. It implies that agitation itself is dark, that only when we can keep our hands off will there be room for light. How many times have I examined and re-examined the words of another in my mind, growing dark vines by going over and over what was said? What could it mean? What could all that wasn't said mean? What must I now do in response or in non-response? The thought weeds grow and grow, blocking the light. I laugh when I think of how many hours I've spent in my life weaving storylines that never came true, until like weeds they covered my heart. It's as if the light, in infinite patience, won't force itself into our hearts. No, it seems to wait and wait for us to open, content to fill whatever small space we can clear in ourselves. It seems that agitations of the dark always cover over. For myself, I worked for years, covering over sore lesions of esteem with agitations of accomplishment, till my heart was covered with a thicket of achievements. Only when I put the achievements aside did the light begin to move. Only then did a universal warmth somehow reach my sore center. Only when I let the dark energies rest did I finally begin to heal. For your meditation, consider something you're re-examining in your mind. Breathe deeply, and if you can, stop thinking about it. Let your breath part the dark thoughts, so the light of being can reach the sore center that wants to be held. August 5th. The chick being born. Every crack is also an opening. When in the midst of great change, it's helpful to remember how a chick is born. From the view of the chick, it's a terrifying struggle. Confined and curled in a dark shell, half-formed, the chick eats all its food and stretches to the contours of its shell. It begins to feel hungry and cramped. Eventually, the chick begins to starve and feels suffocated by the ever-shrinking space of its world. Finally, its own growth begins to crack the shell, and the world as the chick knows it is coming to an end. Its sky is falling. As the chick wriggles through the cracks, it begins to eat its shell. In that moment, growing but fragile, starving and cramped, its whole world breaking, the chick must feel like it's dying. Yet once everything it has relied on falls away, the chick is born. It doesn't die, but falls into the world. The lesson is profound. Transformation always involves the falling away of things we have relied on, and we are left with a feeling that the world as we know it is coming to an end, because it is. Yet the chick offers us the wisdom that the way to be born while still alive is to eat our own shell. When faced with great change in self, in relationship, even in our sense of calling, we somehow must take in all that has enclosed us, nurtured us, incubated us, so when the new life is upon us, the old is within us. For your meditation, the next chance you get, watch something being born. If moved by this notion, actively pursue this. Go to a zoo, or a farm, or a nursery, or an aquarium, or walk the floor of newborns at your local hospital. As you witness birth of some kind, note what detail touches you. Take it as a teacher, and see if it describes something struggling to be born in you. August 6th. The heart's pleasure. We are born with this need to cry our naked cry inside each other. We're so shy about our sexuality that we often miss the quiet teachings that overcome us in moments of true intimacy. The deep intensity of sensitivity during orgasm, for instance, is a sweet paradox in how we all cherish that moment and want to return there over and over, and yet none of us can endure that ecstasy for very long. This heightened moment reveals a great deal to us about both our very human limitations and our deepest moments of being alive. It's not by chance that we feel compelled to be naked and vulnerable in the presence of another, that despite all our fears and defensive styles, we want to be held and touched completely just at the moment when we are unbearably sensitive. This is the heart's definition of pleasure. And though we need this moment of exposure and release to feel complete, we also must accept that we can't bear it for very long. This is why the cries of ecstasy and agony often sound the same. that we need to feel such complete sensitivity and vulnerability in union with another is proof that no one can live this life alone. In this way, true intimacy can't happen without trust. When we let our bodies become this sensitive while holding back the heart, we forego ecstasy and experience its smaller echo, climax. In actuality, this moment of ecstasy, of holding nothing back, can be experienced not just during sex, but in the being and doing and truth-telling of all our relationships. In the ecstatic moment when we allow ourselves to be completely revealed and held at the same time. In this daring and fragile moment, the heart rehearses all its gifts, being who we really are, holding nothing back, trusting another, being complete, and witnessing the completeness of another. This is a meditation on intimacy to be shared with a loved one. Sit facing each other and breathe slowly until you find a natural common rhythm. Maintain eye contact and gently hold each other's face. Trace each other's features slowly and lightly with your fingertips, letting the walls between you thin. August 7th. What we bring along. A river doesn't hold all the water that passes through it. In our journey through time, we all struggle constantly with what to bring along and what to leave behind. It feels so hard to throw anything away, but if we don't, we will drown underneath a weight of our own making. The river is a good model. It doesn't own the water that rushes by, yet it couldn't be in more intimate relationship to it, as the force of what moves through shapes it. It's the same with everything we love. In truth, there is no point to holding on to the deepest things that matter, for they have already shaped us. The purpose of sentiment is to release the powerful feelings that sleep in us. Sometimes books and cards and shells and even dried flowers do this, but often we carry more than we need, seldom trusting that what these small treasures represent is already living within us. Often the most useful gift we can give ourselves is to lay our lives open like a river. For your meditation, hold a memento that has meaning for you, and meditate on the feeling it releases. Be aware of where this feeling lives in you. Consider how alive or not this memento is for you. Consider why you keep it. August 8th. Surrender like a duck. Beneath what I try to see is all I need. It was years ago, but I remember it clearly. I was walking along the shore of a lake in the middle of the day, and there in the sun, a good 10 yards out, was a duck curled into itself, fast asleep. With its slick, tufted head tucked into its body, it bobbed peacefully in the lapping of the water. This little scene undid me, for here was an ultimate lesson in trust. Without any intent or knowledge of itself, this little duck, asleep in the womb of the world, was a deep and wordless teacher. If only we, could surrender this completely to the mystery of life, we would be carried and renewed. It was obvious that the duck would wake and swim its little patterns on the water, but this little creature's ability to let go so completely allowed its time on earth to be filled and saturated, if just for a few minutes, with a depth of peace that only surrender can open us to. Only rarely have I let go this completely, yet those moments of total surrender have thoroughly changed my life. When struck with cancer, I somehow fell from the ledge of my fear and entered the operating room like this little duck. It was the threshold to the other side. When lonely and afraid to reach out, I have somehow collapsed repeatedly into the ocean of another's love, and this has cleansed my weary heart. And in my search now for wisdom to live by, I stumble at times and surrender what I think I know so completely that I find myself adrift in a deeper way that is neither wise nor unwise, but simply life-affirming. For your meditation, when you are tired, sit quietly and breathe away the heaviness of the day. With each breath, release a thing undone, a bruise encountered, a worry or fear that has been fed. Don't analyze or solve these things, just breathe them away. Once light enough, see yourself as that little duck, and feel the lapping of the mystery all around you. Feel its buoyancy. For just 10 seconds, surrender. That is, soften all your resistance, and just let the water of life carry you. August 9th. Preparing the Way. So long as you haven't experienced this, to die and so to grow, you are only a troubled guest on the dark earth. Goethe. To die is not a bad thing. Cells die every day. Paradoxically, it's how the body lives. Casings shed, coverings fall away, and new growth appears. It's how we stay vital. Likewise, ways of thinking die like cells, and we suffer greatly when we refuse to let what's growing underneath make its way as the new skin of our lives. It's the stubbornness with which we refuse to let what's growing underneath come through that pains us. It's the fear that nothing is growing underneath that feeds our despair. It's the moment that we cease growing in any direction that is truly deadly. When resisting this process, we become a troubled guest, moaning like a human crow. We double the pain of living when we try to stop the emergence that all life goes through. Imagine if trees never shed their leaves, or if waves never turned over, or if clouds never dumped their rain and disappeared. I say this as much to remind myself as you. Little deaths prevent big deaths. What matters most is waiting its turn underneath all that is expending itself to prepare the way. For your meditation, sit quietly and consider the many selves you have been. As you breathe evenly, consider how the new self has always been growing underneath the old. Now close your eyes and meditate on the newness growing within you right now. As you breathe steadily, relax your grip on the habits of your mind that might be blocking your growth. August 10th. At random. Random is the instant a horse at full speed has all four hooves off the ground. This is the original meaning of the word. It refers to the mystery of unbridled passion, to the lift that results from total immersion and surrender. In our age, however, random means without design, method, or purpose. It refers to utter chance. It helps us dismiss whatever appears to be beyond the control of our will. If we didn't author it, it must be accidental. Yet our lives are full of unexpected surges of kindness that seem to come from nowhere. Just when you're thirsty, a cup is gathered and passed around. Just when you're lonely to the point of snapping that bone way inside that you show no one, someone offers you a ride or steadies the grocery bag about to drop from your grip. Just when you feel nothing can raise your sad head from the lonely road, the deer stutter across the road in exact rhythm with handle. So what might we learn from the horse at random? Consider how all of its energy and desire mounts for the brief moment it inhabits itself fully, and in that moment it flies, only to touch down again, and to fly again, and touch down again. For us, the moment at random is the moment of holding nothing back, of giving our all to whatever situation is before us. In that charged moment, we come as close to flying as human beings can. We soar briefly with a passion for life that brings everything within us to meet our daily world. I experienced this again and again in the many hospital beds I lay flat in while going through cancer. When I could hold nothing back, not tears, not my pain, not frustration or my anger, I found myself at random, off the ground, though I couldn't get out of bed. And remarkably, it put me in the flow of the lives around me. For just as pain in the body signals other cells to flood the injured area, our honest experience lived at random calls other lives to our aid. Just as blood flows from healthy parts of the body to those that are injured without either part knowing they will meet, so too in the universal body. We flow to each other's aid, often without knowing where we are headed. Mysteriously, the life force heals itself this way. And what we call chance or luck or coincidence is the circulation of life healing itself through us and in us. For your meditation, do one thing at random today. If a patch of sun catches your eye, hold nothing back. Go stand in it and raise your face to the sky. If you're caught in the rain, open yourself to it, however briefly. If you hear live music on the street, seek it out and listen quietly for a moment. If you see something beautiful, smile slowly. If it still seems beautiful, allow yourself to laugh that you have the privilege to see it twice. Hold nothing back. Allow what touches you to change your path. August 11th. While running. To see takes time. Georgia O'Keeffe. While running in May, I saw a neatly trimmed hedge, and sprouting briskly through its symmetry were scraggly blue flowers wildly obeying no form. It made me smile, for I've spent many years resisting being pruned and shaped. I loved how the wild blue just hung there above the hedge. While running in June, I saw an older man out pruning that hedge. He was so involved, clipping gingerly, then backing up, sweating through his eye as if the world depended on his diligence. I was touched by his care. We nodded briefly, and without a word, it was clear that it wasn't the hedge, but that he needed something to care for. I realized this is how I've lived since surviving cancer. While running in August, I came upon a slim fountain gushing from an unseeable center, as high as it could, reaching without arms till it ran out of reach, and at its closest to the sky, it began to fall back on itself. Always what was rising up, replacing what was falling away. Sweating and heaving, I realized this is what it means to be free. For your meditation, sit quietly and call to the part in you that resists being pruned. Affirm it. Breathe deeply and call to the part in you that needs to care. Embrace it. Breathe freely, and call to the part in you that after reaching falls back on itself. Now bless it. August 12th. To live out loud. We are here to live out loud. Balzac. Early on, we know enough to cry and sound our way into the world.